All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis?
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want.
When we can hear us in the big echoey sound when the opening's playing.
When you could do God voice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Save some of those God voice segments for a promo.
Right.
Anyway, this is Geek Stuff, Episode 9, Thou Shalt Not Bear False Witness.
Right. I'm not even going to try to explain this one because I'm not sure I get it.
It's
letting Kevin worry about this one.
I swear to you, we can do it.
Okay.
You just do the few little simple tricks that I have taught you. And it'll all make sense.
All right.
And we have not informed Mr. Fantastic as to why it is going to be Episode 9, Thou Shalt Not Bear False Witness. Because when we try to work it in,
right,
it'll be funny and he'll laugh. And since we're trying to entertain Mr. Fantastic, apparently, we will be successful.
Okay. All right, so we're going to go right into the news segment then today.
What? The news what?
The news swegment.
Swegment.
It's a new combination of things. We're going to go right into the news segment today with Brian Benedict Arnold Singer, who has now come out and said that there's a good chance he's going to ditch the Superman franchise for the second film, that he's not going to continue it, that he's looking at potentially doing a Logan's Run remake.
Which he's been talking about since... before X-Men.
Right.
He's been talking about that since Apt Pupil.
Right. But if that's the case, then why tie yourself to another potential franchise and then ditch it?
But no one has said that he was going to do more than one Superman film.
Well, I think there was some speculation out there and
sure,
some
there's speculation
out there.
That he was going to do 3 X-Men movies. You see where that speculation ended
well,
up?
Well, I think originally he was going to, and I think he changed his mind last
yeah,
minute.
Yeah, sure, because he had the opportunity to do a Superman
film. A bad movie.
You don't know. Have you seen it?
No.
Potentially probably going to be disappointing, but we don't know until we're actually disappointed.
Sure.
I don't want to be... I don't want to bear false witness against the Superman movie. See? I don't want to bear false witness against the Superman movie until I've actually seen the Superman movie.
Okay, so I'll revisit my opinion once I've had the chance to see it.
And that new trailer shows Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor. I mean, that's worth the film.
Well, again, and I said it before.
I think
Kevin Spacey's probably the only part of the film that I'm actually kind of interested in.
The effects look nice.
The effects do look nice, but...
what's her name is hot.
Yeah, well, you know.
Kate Bosworth.
Yeah.
She's hot.
But, yeah, so that's the only movie stuff I have this week. Do you have anything movie-related this week?
I do.
What do you got this week?
I have a little bit here from Halle Berry talking about X3.
Okay.
And how she's complaining once again that... like in the original X-Men movie, she claimed that her character was just sort of background, and then she claimed when X2 came out that her character would be more prominent in the film. And now that X3 is upon us, she's now claiming, of course, that her character in the first two X films was background and decoration, but now she is going to be more prominent in this film, and how she controls weather, and we're going to see a lot more of that kind of aspect of her character.
My question here, who sucks more, Storm or Halle Berry?
I'd say Halle Berry.
Yeah, you know what? The character of Storm, while never one of my favorite X-Men characters, did have some decent stuff that, you know, had a couple good storylines, did have some decent character plots throughout the books. I was talking about this the other day with somebody, and while I kind of like having Storm in the movie, I don't think that I can think of somebody else that could play the role. That's the problem. I can't think of another African-American actress that could play that role.
Grace Jones.
No.
No.
No. What's her name?
That was a joke. Pretty funny, though. Maybe Grace Jones with that. You could do Mohawk Storm if you want to do Grace Jones.
No, I would say
Angela Bassett.
Was the easy choice.
But
there.
Angela Bassett, I think she's too buff for Storm. Storm was always kind of buff, but she was still kind of soft and feminine.
Really?
And
in the Mohawk days?
Well.
She's fine. Angela Bassett would have been a better Storm than fucking Halle Berry.
Wow.
Would have made more sense, too.
Yeah. Well.
In my opinion. But then she doesn't really match up well with James Marsden, who is Cyclops.
Right.
Age-wise.
Right.
And they should be comparably aged, sure. I think.
Has there been any sign of Jubilee? I know Jubilee was at the end of the first one, I think.
She's in this one.
Major character?
I don't know about major, but there's a whole lot of one-offs in this movie where they show their, at least is what I'm hearing, is that they show their powers and then they're off. I heard the movie's like three-quarters fighting.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a lot of different mutants using a lot of different
Callisto
powers.
Callisto, I hear, is in there. Psylocke, I know for a fact, is in there.
It looks terrible.
I'm trying to think. I think Jubilee might even be in one of the trailers that we've seen so far. And then, you know, a couple of the other characters from the second film, Colossus. Has come into it. The only character that people are still talking about, but there's been no sign or no talk about being officially in the movie, would be Gambit, whom everybody was convinced was going to be in this film, but he hasn't been in any of the trailers.
Right.
There hasn't been any buzz. So either they're keeping him hidden because there's a huge thing with him, or they've just opted not to use him.
Which is what I'm hoping. I'll take the latter.
Yeah?
Yeah, because there's much more interesting characters than Gambit.
Sure. I would have rather have seen them kept Nightcrawler in the film.
The thrust of this, there's more to this Halle Berry Storm issue, and that is that they asked her, would she be interested in appearing in any future X-Men spinoff series, such as a storyline involving the Young Mutants, to which she said yes. She feels her character has really evolved into someone who can handle a position of leadership. Which is fine. I mean, that's probably the way they're going to go from here anyway, would be my guess.
Right.
That Wolverine movie, I think, starts filming this year.
That's a prequel,
or early next year. Is it?
Yeah. Hugh Jackman has said it's a prequel.
Is it? All right. It's a prequel. Don't know. Because that's what he says. That doesn't mean that's what it'll end up being.
Right.
But so there's that. There's also there's also talk of like they said here, some kind of spinning off, some New Mutants kind of film franchise even.
Yeah.
To which people like Halle Berry as Storm and James Marsden as Cyclops and Patrick Stewart as Professor X would be very appropriate cameos.
Right.
Well, even maybe a bit more than cameos, I would say. In the case of Professor X, I would say it would have to be a bit more than a cameo. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense to do that.
Sure.
It makes sense to do more stories with different characters.
Sure, sure.
If they're going to try to keep this thing going at all. But really, Halle Berry was asked also about Catwoman. And she says she is done with comic book characters, even though she said that she would come back to do Storm again
Right.
For young. She's done with comic book characters. Right. However, she would go back and do Catwoman again.
Yeah, but would the audiences go back to the theaters she to thinks, see another Catwoman?
She film? Thinks that Catwoman is a very strong character that could be great if done right. And the storyline would have to avoid problems such as having weak villains like a woman whose face shattered. She feels the character is a lot more to explore. She's nuts.
Well,
she's nuts. Out of one side of her mouth, she won't do comic book movies again. Out of the other side, she'd come back and play Storm. Out of one side of her mouth, you know, it's just, she's nuts.
That Catwoman movie was such a flop. Even in DVD sales, it didn't do great. And they thought it was going to do well in DVD sales.
Astrocious.
It was, I don't think anybody would back another movie. I don't think the fans would tolerate seeing another movie.
The fans?
Well,
the enemies.
Well, the couple of people that did go and see the movie because, you know, it was Halle Berry in some ripped leather outfit, I don't even think that they'd follow it for a second film. I think that they'd probably let
God,
it die.
I can't
where it
even.
Is.
That'd be like doing Elektra 2.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's that level of crap.
But at least Elektra 2 did pretty good in DVD sales.
You mean Elektra?
Or Elektra, rather, did pretty good in DVD sales.
Because Elektra 1 would be Daredevil.
Right.
But it wouldn't really be Elektra 1 because it wasn't about her.
Right. But anyway, actually, while we're talking about X-Men, we're talking about Halle Berry. Did you see the 7-minute trailer?
I did now see the 7-minute trailer.
And what did you think?
I think that there are some interesting things in the second trailer. I think what is most interesting to me is they were exploring Wolverine trying to talk to Cyclops about moving on.
Cyclops' line in that scene, in that first hallway scene, is great. The not everybody heals as quickly as you, Wolverine. Yeah. Perfect line.
Yeah, and that is their relationship during that time period in the comics. You know, I'll say this again, and I have said this for a number of years. The character who is nailed pinpoint exactly in the movies is Cyclops.
Yep.
He is nailed perfectly. James Marsden, perfect choice.
Yep.
His delivery. His character, the when Professor X is out in X-Men 1 and he's having that little everything that's worth knowing you taught me and all, that is perfect. It's perfect. And it seems like X3 is going to continue the tradition of having a spot on characterization of Cyclops. And I'm really excited about it. So in the 7 minutes that I saw of the movie, that, let's say, minute was probably the best piece for me. That more than anything else, I did not like the Beast.
I like the Beast.
I didn't like it. I think he looks hokey.
Oh, I disagree.
I don't like the makeup.
I disagree.
I mean, I think the casting is probably very good. Although they give you a breath of him, they don't really give you the full spectrum. But I always have liked his character. What I'm not liking here is him standing up straight and the way that he just looks hokey to me. I don't think it was worth bringing him in to sacrifice Nightcrawler.
Well, I mean, if the thought that they sacrificed one blue character for another blue character stands true, then I agree with you. But
and also,
I've been pleased with what I've seen so far. I really kind of look forward to seeing Kelsey Grammer in that role.
And also, he is some sort of mutant affairs politician sort of something, which also doesn't ring true of the character in the books.
No.
So there's that.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that I'm wary about.
The part that upsets me the most is the lack of continuity in that they showed Hank McCoy, I think, in the first one on TV.
Yeah,
and it wasn't Kelsey Grammer, so that's terrible.
Well, they'll probably Lucas the movie and go back and put out a special edition of X-Men where they actually go and put Kelsey Grammer in there.
Yeah.
Although if there's a god, that won't happen.
I don't know. But actually, my favorite part of that whole trailer, I think, second to or right before the Wolverine-Cyclops scene, because I did like that, was the Angel sequence. I really, really like that Angel sequence.
Oh, that was good, too.
I think it really looks impressive, and I'm really interested to see how they push that character.
He just looks short. I don't know why.
Yeah, but you know what, though? He was never really tall.
No,
I mean,
he was, though.
Not, was he really? Even as Archangel, I don't remember him being that tall.
Tall. You have to look at group shots. He's always in the back of the group shots because he's tall. You know?
I guess.
He has the wings.
Well, yeah. not just because of the wings. I mean, he really comes across to me as taller. I'm not saying that that's going to bug me. In fact, I enjoyed that. I'd say that maybe that may be my second favorite segment of the 7 minutes. But there was some schlock in there too. I mean, there's that whole, what are we going to do about this cure thing? And Magneto happens to be sitting in this audience while these mutants are discussing. I mean, it's already, I can see that there are pieces, giant pieces of contrived that we're going to have to get through.
Right. Well, you know, we're going to have to see. We're a little less than 2 weeks away, right? I think from the movie opening.
Matt and I will be hosting the midnight show of X3 at Clifton Commons, AMC, mm-hmm. Clifton Commons in Clifton, New Jersey. That's on Route 3 East. Mm-hmm. And it's a midnight show Thursday the 28th, I think.
No, it's the 25th into the 26th. Is Friday is the 26th. Okay. It's a Thursday night.
Okay.
Into the 26th.
Okay.
And I just have two more bits for the new segment. All one, right, which I forgot about, actually, is movie related. It looks like they're going to be doing a Warcraft movie. Looks like Blizzard Entertainment is going to be, I guess, producing and probably overseeing it. And it's going to be a live action Warcraft movie. Not much else out there yet, but.
Ooh, I wonder if it will be as fantastic as that Dungeons and Dragons set of films.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I was just about to bring that up. I think that one of the biggest appeals that Warcraft and World of Warcraft has going for it now is it has such character to the art, and it's not your regular plain old D&D clone game that's right out there. There is a lot that goes into the art direction, so it's going to be interesting to see how they can try and turn that into the film, because they're using regular humans in the film. They're going to look like everybody else. It may lose that World of Warcraft feel.
Well, my concern is that a movie like this is not going to have the big spectacular budget behind it that, let's say, Lord of the Rings had behind it, right? And Lord of the Rings was really as great as it was, or one of the reasons it was so great was because everything looked really, really well done. All the makeup and all the CG was really, really good. If this isn't like that, they run the risk of it just being terribly hokey.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to have to watch out for.
Turning it into the World of Warcrap.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which is what I expect this will end up being in any event.
In any event. And the last thing I wanted to bring up was a Sideshow toy announcement. And you know by now, after listening to us for a couple of weeks, that we love everything Sideshow puts out, especially their premium format figures, especially the Star Wars figures, because they are really gorgeous pieces.
Right.
They announced a new Luke figure. It's Dagobah Luke with Yoda on his back. And they both look great. I mean, the Yoda on his back, I mean, the sculpt and everything looks great.
Oh, I haven't
great.
Seen it yet. Luke they decided. Looks really good. So he's just in the backpack on his back?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not going to be a separate. It's not going to be
No.
Piece
I didn't expect that it would be separate. What I was kind of hoping for
was like a display.
No, to be honest, what I was hoping for was that one-handed handstand with Yoda on his foot or something.
Yeah.
Or sitting nearby him. Or wasn't there a scene like that where he's balancing Yoda
on his
foot or something like that?
Something
in Jedi,
like that, yeah. something kind of like that.
Something,
but no.
The premium format figures are obviously just the top quality collectibles mm-hmm. on the market today. Sideshow premium format, top quality collectible figures that are being made today. And my only, I don't want to say complaint because that's not right, but my only criticism, mm-hmm. shall we say, would be that they are all kind of standing there.
Yeah, but you know what? I think they really all try to capture some sort of dramatic pose or scene.
Oh, yeah. No,
much
I totally
like the
agree.
Unleashed figures.
Well,
less action, though.
Unlike
right?
the Unleashed figures.
Right. Less action, but it's very similar. I don't know. I kind of like it. From what I saw, and all I saw was their little advertising banner
right.
because that's all they really have so far, as I know. It looks pretty good. I mean,
I'm just saying, just a general thing. I would like to see a premium format figure in an action pose. That's what I would like to see. And I don't consider, theoretically, you know what, that's an action
Sideshow,
pose.
Sideshow, in all of its greatness, really doesn't do the action pose.
Oh, really?
Do that? What's
statues? Lord of the Rings? Marvel statues?
Yeah, but even those are kind of single pose.
There was a format figure in action pose.
They're not really capturing sweeping movement or anything like the Unleashed
Electra
figures.
Electra. The premium format Electra was
I don't remember it that well, I'll take your word for it.
It was good.
Well, maybe if you're lucky, Dagobaluk will have so much articulation that you can...
They have none.
Well, maybe if you're lucky, you can turn him upside down, put Yoda on his foot, go in the backyard, get three rocks or whatever it is, put him on the side, and there you go.
That's your contribution. It'll be our third project. It's gonna be the Lord of the Rings base,
right?
The Pirates of the Spanish Main game table,
right?
And kit bashed, customized, premium format Luke figure with Yoda on his foot.
I would never kit bash a Sideshow toy ever. Never. They don't need it.
I know.
No. But I think it would be...
Just making a joke.
I think it would be appropriate for them to do an action pose on some of these guys.
Well, we know some people over there. We should suggest it to
Maybe
them.
Maybe we will.
See what they say.
Maybe we will.
But you got to have friends.
Hey, Kev, we finally got a MySpace page.
Ugh.
It's www.myspace.com/BigKev'sGeekStuff.
I can't believe we sunk to this level.
So go there, join up, become one of our friends.
Ugh, yeah, one of our friends like that awful Tom.
Hi, I'm Tom. I created MySpace.
Kev, how do you know what Tom sounds like?
I was just guessing he would sound like that. So we're back on Geek Stuff Episode 9, Thou Shalt Not Bear False Witness.
That's right.
And I'm going to take a little heat.
Okay.
And a little criticism myself today that I've received. We've gotten some emails.
Uh-huh.
We've gotten some communiques.
More than some this time.
We've gotten some live feedback. Oh, wait.
Not live.
I can't say that.
No.
Yeah, no, it's, well...
It's from feedback. Live people.
Person-to-person feedback.
Right.
Where I have been criticized for my criticizing of certain people, places, and things in the industry. So I'm going to address that criticism of my criticism in a critical manner right now.
Okay.
Because...
I'm going
to it has
back
been brought to my
go.
Attention. No, I want you to okay. participate. It has been brought to my attention that I perhaps am bearing false witness against some people and some things, and I'm going to address them.
All right.
Paramount and first off on this is that I have perhaps borne false witness against one Joe Quesada.
Did you?
Joe Quesada is the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, and we at Geek Stuff are very critical of Marvel Comics
and Joe Quesada
and how they're run, and Joe Quesada, and I was told that maybe I'm not addressing the whole picture, and what we are critical of Joe about is the fact that Marvel has once again, the leader in the comic industry, has once again returned us to trends that were popular in the late 80s and 90s. Alternate covers, limited edition covers, reprints of every book with a new cover on it every week.
Right.
special incentive covers for retailers. You get one in 10 or less. You get one special Joe Quesada covers. Mind you, 90% of them are actually done by Joe.
Yes.
But you get one for every 50 books you order, or one for every 100 books you order, or something like that.
Right.
These incentive things, that's part one of it. That from the industry side, from the business side of things, that is something that under Joe's reign as editor-in-chief, these things have come back and flourished and are overtaking the industry. DC has now followed suit by doing virtually the same thing. I don't think as harsh as Marvel, and I'll get criticism for that, for saying that it wasn't that DC's doing it, but you said Marvel was doing it worse.
Yeah.
You know, which it's my opinion that Marvel is doing a worse job at.
And I would tend to agree with you.
So that's from the business aspect. From the creative aspect, Joe has overseen, allowed, and supported the complete and utter dissolution of Marvel continuity.
Right.
So what used to be the Marvel Universe is now several Marvel Universes.
Universi.
Yes. And Joe has supported this with such quippy lines as, continuity shouldn't stand in the way of a great story. And one of the things that when I was a kid that made me want to read Marvel Comics and made me read even more Marvel Comics was the fact that you'd be reading an issue of anything, Fantastic Four. You know, or Spider-Man, and there'd be something happening in the sphere where more than one character's story took place.
Right.
The FF are in New York, Spider-Man's in New York. Let's just use those as an example.
Okay.
And Spider-Man would be like, well, I can't handle this one alone. I'm going to go find the Fantastic Four. And he would go there, and the Fantastic Four would be speeding off in the Fantastic car. And at the bottom of that panel... Mm-hmm. They'd have that little bar that says, want to know where the FF are going? Check out FF issue something or other.
Right, right, right. Sure.
And that was beautiful continuity. Same thing with any sort of continuity issues. Marvel Universe was one universe.
Right.
And now there isn't two books that have continuity with each other. There's no continuity in the books.
Well, that's long plagued. That's long plagued
okay.
Marvel.
Okay, so these are, basically speaking, these are my criticisms of Joe Quesada. And finally, an aspect of Joe is his hands-offness with the fans, although he would tell you otherwise. Stupid things like not doing sketches and making a 10-minute appearance at a con. And I mean, not that anyone cares at this point, but making sure that he's the one who's doing all these special covers. You know, it's things like that.
Right.
Okay, so these have been my criticisms. Joe's answer to these criticisms are, all these decisions are being made above my head.
Right.
But he's the editor-in-chief. So does the buck not stop with the editor-in-chief? Has the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics any power whatsoever? Apparently not.
Apparently not. He's a figurehead, apparently.
Because all the decisions are being made above him. And so what I'm here to say is today is that I'd like to say that perhaps I should be more critical of the publishers of Marvel Comics, one of whom is Dan Buckley. And the other one, I don't even know what his name is.
Okay.
But Dan Buckley, I believe, was around during the glut of the late 80s, early 90s. So, of course, he would know about all these tricks and sleight of hands with the business side of things. But apparently, I'm going too heavy on Joe. This is what I'm being told in emails and in person, is that perhaps I'm too heavy on Joe, blaming Joe too much for this. Well, I say this. Joe Quesada is the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics. If he is the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, he's making those decisions. I met Joe. I talked to Joe about these issues. Joe's not some patsy. Joe isn't Lee Harvey Oswald, who's blinded to all these decisions and in the unfortunate position of having to back them because that's his position. Mm-hmm. Joe is in full support of these things, and he does them because he wants to do them. And I'm not going to take any criticism of my criticism of Joe Quesada until Joe Quesada shows me something that he's doing that is opposite of what his public face is. And what his public face is right now is that he is ruining the comic industry.
Yep.
There. Let's move on.
Okay.
I've been very critical. We have been very critical on this program of one Jesse Falcon.
Deservedly so.
Product manager for the Toy Biz Marvel Legends line, Marvel products in general that come from Toy Biz.
Right.
Been very critical of him.
Mm-hmm.
We've been critical of his choices, critical of his methods, critical of his, how does one say this accurately, lies and deceit. Right. And we've received some emails saying, maybe you're not seeing the whole picture.
Bearing false witness against Jesse Falcon?
Perhaps we may have borne false witness against Jesse Falcon.
Okay.
And the response that I get to this is the what I'm hearing here is that, you know, these decisions that we talk about making characters like the New Avengers and X-23 and Sentry, characters that aren't some of them aren't even a year old yet, yet they already have Marvel Legends figures.
Right.
Yet there's, let me think if I can count them on one hand, 4,000 or 5,000 fucking Marvel characters that are more deserving of a Marvel Legends figure.
Right.
I'd rather have a Brother Voodoo figure than X-23.
Oh, man.
That I'm serious. Brother Voodoo in the classic 70s, I would rather have that than Sentry.
Well.
Anyway, we've also been very critical of packouts, the Walmart exclusive line,
right.
Chase figures. We've been very critical of these things. And what I'm hearing is that these decisions aren't being made by Jesse Falcon. These decisions are being made above Jesse's head.
Why does Jesse get to take, why does he get to take all the compliments for the things that are done right, but he doesn't have to take any of the criticisms for things that are done wrong?
Hmm. Are you noticing a pattern?
Yeah.
Jesse Falcon makes Marvel toys. Joe Quesada makes Marvel comics. Who is the mysterious secret figure who, if he were in a comic book, would be very shadowed? We might only see his hand on the console, but he would be all in black with some mysterious lighting behind him so that we couldn't actually see it. Who is this mystery person who both Quesada and Falcon are blaming for their fuck-ups?
Are you alluding to the fact that Dr. Claw is running Marvel Comics?
I think Dr. Claw is in charge of the Marvel licenses.
That one metal hand?
That's all we get to see is the one metal hand. Yet every single time there's a screw-up, those decisions are being made above me, said Joe. Decisions are being made above me, said Jesse. One more kind of off of the Marvel topic for a second, but maybe really not that far. We have been very critical of Toy Fair magazine.
Deservedly so.
Toy Fair magazine calls itself the toy magazine.
Not so much.
And my problem with this is this current issue, like we talked about last week, mm-hmm. where they feature a Superman toy on the cover and look inside for more Superman details in a toy magazine. And for that toy magazine to feature 6 pages of schlock, none of which had anything to do with the toys, mm-hmm. is retarded.
I agree.
But perhaps we are bearing false witness to Toy Fair by not taking into account the fact that Toy Fair has always been kind of the this is good, this is good, this is good magazine.
The Leonard Maltin of
toy magazines, as we have always called it. Where it's never a question of what's bad or what isn't good. It's a question of what is good and what is great.
Right.
My problem with this is that they are slowly forgetting about the fact that they're a toy magazine. They're turning into Wizard 2.
Right.
If you take the incoming section and slap it into Wizard, it's Toy Fair. So what I have to say to that criticism is this. If it is the toy industry magazine, if it is the toy magazine, and they stress the all the time, on one of the glass doors in the office, it says the, etched in glass, the toy magazine, with the capitalized and underlined.
Right.
And if that's the case, if it is the toy magazine, then it should be talking about the toys.
Right.
And if it has some sort of statute, publishing statute from Wizard Entertainment that says, look, we're not going to say that the Superman toys from the new movie suck, then they shouldn't be the toy magazine. What are they? Why? What are they doing? They're pushing product. They're saying this is really good. And of course, the top 10, or as I like to call it, figures you'll never find on the peg section. What are they doing? Are they in any way looking, criticizing, shining a light, talking about the toy industry in a balanced way? Or are they just saying, here's the good stuff and we're not going to really talk about the bad stuff? You can't put a Superman toy on the cover of a toy magazine and then dedicate 8 pages inside, which is 8 pages that would have been deleted from a good Wizard issue, into that Toy Fair magazine and then not mention the toys. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know.
And if they're going to be the Leonard Maltin of the toy industry, let them be the Leonard Maltin of the toy industry. But you, then say what it is. Mm-hmm. Then don't give us crap articles. Cut half the magazine out. Cut out the crap. Cut out the pictures of editors. The little cartoons of editors. Cut out the monthly rag or whatever that bullshit waste of time section is. That, oh, you know, we're not just a toy magazine, we're a humor magazine. No, you're not. It's not funny. Cut it out. Make it a price guide. Which, who the hell cares? Make it a price guide.
eBay alert. eBay alert. eBay alert.
eBay is the price guide, guys. Okay? Yeah. eBay is the price guide. Not what you say. And if you're going to eBay saying, well, this is what it sold for and that's how you're doing your price guide, more power to you. You want to save 30, 40 fucking pages? Right. Hey, you want to see what this toy's worth? Go look on eBay. Trim it out. Make it a tiny magazine. Drop the price to $1.99 and say something about the toy industry, and then you'll sell magazines. And I'm not saying that they're selling more or selling less, because quite frankly, I don't care.
Right.
What I care about, I'm sure they care. I'm sure it's very important to them that they sell more magazines, so they want to have a wider appeal. Then don't call yourself the toy magazine. Don't call yourself Toy Fair. In conclusion, although on the surface it appears that we may bear false witness to Joe Quesada, Jesse Falcon, and Marvel in general, and to a lesser extent, Toy Fair magazine. It is not that we are bearing false witness. It is, by and large, that we are witnessing the buck not stopping anywhere.
Right.
It stops to a mystery man above at Marvel, and it stops with the, we're trying to discover what we are with Toy Fair. We can't decide, are we a toy magazine? Are we humor? Do we want to say bad things? Do we want to say good? What it boils down to is politics. Mm-hmm. And I don't want politics in my comics and toys. I want my comics and toys without the bullshit politics. That's all I got to say.
Matt, we're hosting a midnight show this week.
That's right, Kev. We're hosting the 1201 a.m. showing of X3, The Last Stand, at the AMC Clifton Commons, located at 405 Route 3 East in Clifton, New Jersey.
We'll be doing the usual trivia questions and handing out tons of swag.
All courtesy of Time Warp Comics and Games, located in Cedar Grove, New Jersey.
Check them out at www.timewarpcomics.com.
So that's 12:01 a.m. at the AMC Clifton Commons. For more information, check out the appearances link on the home site.
Schnicked.
For most of you out there know that last week was E3, and there was a lot of stuff that came out of that.
What's E3?
It's the big video game expo out in California.
Oh.
Don't call yourself a geek. Anyway, probably the two biggest things there discussed would be the new Nintendo unit, the Wii, and the PS3.
Wait, the what?
Wait, we got to back up there because...
What? It's not two of the biggest things discussed?
No, it is, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there saying, what? Because it's called the Wii, and it's spelled W-I-I,
okay.
But it's pronounced Wii.
Okay, what did I say?
That's what you said, Wii. Okay. It's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, right.
It's kind of like Sony Vega / Wega, spelled with a W, pronounced with a V by most people out there who believe that they're in the know. I think, I don't know. Yeah. And it's used to denote, okay, it's like, we've broken the mainstream barrier and everybody can play video games now.
But doesn't the...
Including Wii.
Doesn't the II also have something to do with the shape of the new controllers?
I believe you're right.
Which I don't know how I feel about yet.
For those of you who don't know, the new controller looks like a remote control for your TV or DVD player.
Yeah, it's actually two pieces. It's one piece is a remote control that I believe is going to be like motion censored. And then there's going to be another piece that's attached to the remote control by a wire, and it's kind of like a floating...
It's an analog stick.
Stick, yeah.
And it's known as... It's generally called the nunchuck.
Oh, is that what it's being called?
Yeah.
So...
Will the cheap Spanish knockoff version be called the nosotros?
It might be. But it might be. But the Wii probably was one of the biggest things there. I don't know. The only trailer I saw really for it was the Twilight Princess trailer, the new Zelda game that's coming out. It looked kind of cool. It looks pretty. I'm not exactly sure why they pushed it off to the Wii and why they didn't release it earlier like they had originally planned. Do you know?
I don't think that the
money.
The final announcement was that it's pushed off. I think that there's a version for each. I could be wrong. I think that's true. My fear with that remote, though,
mm-hmm.
it's not just like a zapper where you point it at the screen,
right.
And you pinpoint a spot and that's, you know, you push the button and you shoot. It's right. Not just that. The system can also sense, you know, like pitch and yaw and you turning it and how far you are and a whole bunch of different orientation, you know, style things that it can detect.
Right.
I just hope that not every game out there becomes... You know, just manipulating that thing in the same way, just with a different theme on screen, a different same game with a different skin.
Well, my first impression when I first read about it was they've tried to revamp the Power Glove. Remember the Power Glove? I think it was for the Super NES, maybe, right?
I can't forget the Power Glove.
Yeah, I mean, but that was kind of a similar thing. It kind of tracked your hands' movements and where it was.
No, it didn't.
Didn't
do any of those things, and that was the problem with it. It was the glove.
Right. I thought it did all that
stuff. No, you moved the fingers and it pushed the button somehow, and it had the pad on there with the had a full, like, you know, A, B,
right.
D-pad thing on there. It was for the Nintendo, and it just didn't do what they advertised it would do, and that was make the game more fun and more realistic. And that's, you know, no big loss, because what were you really expecting to begin with? I mean, it was a glove.
Right, exactly. Well, I think what we expected was that cool VR lawnmower man kind of control everything with your hand glove.
Right, and when you saw the commercial, they always showed the kid playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out,
yeah.
And he would do the super punch. But what they didn't tell you is he's just hitting the button and then making the punching motion with his hand, which was supremely disappointing.
Right, right. But, you know, the controller, I think, is probably the most controversial part of the system right now. What is this? I saw they have a classic controller also that's going to be available. Is that going to replace this joystick/remote controller, or is it an addition to that?
No, I think it's in addition to that, not to be used at the same time unless you have four hands or anything,
right.
But... I think it's just they're going to have this thing called the Virtual Console on there,
okay.
Where you'll be able to play games from older systems, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, their entire library. I don't know what the policy is on third-party titles over time and stuff like that.
Right.
I think including some Genesis and even TurboGrafx games they've licensed for use on
wow.
this console. I don't know what the status is. It was free, then you pay, and free for a time. I don't know what the final thing is there. I really hope it's free because... hell, I'll buy it if it's free. You can download Contra and play using that old style controller. The controller is kind of Super Nintendo inspired, but it
right.
has a left analog and a right analog, and they're in kind of symmetrical places now. They're not; it's not one is high on the left hand and one is low on the right hand.
Right, right.
Looks like it has an R and L, A, B, X, Y, things like that. Start, select, and a home type labeled button in the very center, and it looks pretty decent. It looks real old school, taken into the future.
Yeah, I wonder if it was done to placate some of the people who really have the problem with this new controller design.
Maybe, yeah, a little, but also in support of the Virtual Console thing, and that Nintendo realizes that they can't compete with Sony and with Microsoft in terms of graphics and production value. And although... it has been said that the Wii will be able to produce graphics on par with the 360 is kind of the rumor that's floating out around there from the Nintendo camp.
Well, you know, not to jump over the PS3 because we'll come back to it for a second. But as long as you've brought up the 360 and you've brought up the graphics issue, I saw the Halo 3 trailer, and I know you watched it too. I think Kevin, you watched it also as well.
Yes,
I was not overly impressed with the quality. Now, it could be just because it was a trailer. It could be because it was a download. I don't know. But nothing about it jumped out at me and said, holy shit, 360. It said, holy shit, Halo 3. But that was it. It seemed to just kind of die at that.
I think what you're talking about here is you've identified why Nintendo is doing what they're doing. Because it's going to take so many resources, so much money. It's going to be like people who produce models and art and textures for games, they're going to be like factory workers. These people have to work so much more now. They have to hire so many more people, so many more consultants or, you know, per job people that they hire.
Right.
That it's just way too hard to compete from Nintendo's standpoint being down in the game. Nintendo kind of sees that there's a gap here that they can fill and say, hey, we can make some really good games that appeal to the masses,
mm-hmm.
make some novelty-style games that'll probably sell games like, which are kind of hot for PlayStation 2 now, like Guitar Hero or
right.
a lot of those music or rhythm games that really do pretty well, even though they require a semi-expensive piece of hardware for you to get into.
Like right. Dance but, Dance Revolution?
Exactly, Kevin. But, I think that Nintendo sees that, and they're trying to grasp, capture that market, rather, and they're trying to say, okay, we can really capitalize on the people who will spend maybe $150 on the console but don't want to spend $300 or $400 for an Xbox or $500 or $600 for a PS3, which is not the most expensive console ever, but is still pretty expensive when you're just trying to get into games, you just want to have a little bit of fun.
What was the most expensive? Was it the Neo Geo? Wasn't that like ridiculously expensive when it first came out? Like,
you know,
$500 or something insane.
I don't know what the hard and fast rule on it is, but I wager that it was the Panasonic 3DO at some point. I believe it was $699 or $799.
Wow, I forgot. I've totally forgot about the 3DO. Yeah, probably. That probably was it.
I think the Neo Geo was somewhere more around like 250. The thing was the games were so expensive because they were on ROM cards at the time.
Right.
Memory was expensive, so they were 200 and upwards, and they really still are if you were to get a newer one.
Right. Well, the feel I got from jumping around E3insider.com with all the blogs and stuff that people had posted after being at the event was that a lot of people went into the event hesitant about the Nintendo system, but came away from it feeling that they were really going to support it and back it. And I think it's going to do pretty well. I think it's going to really do well.
I'm pretty intrigued by it. And the funny thing you say about backing it is Nintendo currently has backing them on the record, Sony and Microsoft. Both Sony and Microsoft have gone out there and said, their PR machines have gone out there and said, well, the Nintendo's pretty cool. Maybe you would like to have it as a second system.
Right.
Now, they're both saying this because they want that. They want your little extra money that you were thinking on spending maybe on the PS2, if you're Microsoft, or the other way around, if you're Sony.
Right.
Maybe you can blow that little money on the Nintendo Wii.
Right.
And they'll curb that whole, competition in that way.
I'm not getting it.
Well,
I think you will.
I'm not getting it. I've already decided.
Nintendo overall has consistently been one of my favorite systems. I think I've probably had all the incarnations of it, with the exception of the DS. I don't have a DS. But I don't know. I like it. I like the games they put out for it. I kind of like Nintendo's little niche that they have for themselves. It's very different than the other two systems.
The cutesy games niche.
But it's not. I don't consider them cutesy. I know you do. We kind of had this conversation last week or 2 weeks ago, I think, also. But I don't really see them as cutesy. I mean, I love the Metroid games and the Zelda games at the very least. So
I do see them as cutesy, and I still don't care.
Okay.
So I would still play it. I would still play Smash Brothers. It's not my favorite game, but I'll partake in it.
Sure.
You know, I'm more of like an old school fighter game than fan.
Right.
And a Smash Brothers fan, which is something I did see the Smash Brothers Brawl trailer, it looked pretty good. I mean, it was, the graphics aren't a huge leap over the GameCube graphics. And actually in the beginning, you see four of the characters, I believe. I think it's like Jigglypuff, Pikachu, Mario, and Link running. And then there's a little scene where they kind of morph into their new models, the new incarnations that are newly textured for the Wii. And yeah, they look better. It's Kirby. It's not Jigglypuff. Kirby looks exactly the same. He's just a pink ball. And he's still a pink ball, you know, in the newer system.
With more impressive shading.
Yeah, the red is brighter.
You can't that's just it. You don't even see it. It's not even more impressive shading. It's almost the same thing. But yeah, he's Kirby. I mean, that's it.
But you know what? The Nintendo doesn't seem to be really pushing that. Doesn't seem to be excessively pushing the graphics standpoint.
No, it's all about the
games. It's all about the games, which I think is more realistic. I think that's more realistic for the console right now. But we might as well talk about, you know, since we were talking about price points, we might as well go right into the PS3 because that's also been the buzz, the two versions of it available and the price points associated with those. I think there's going to be one that's $499 at release, which is going to be November 17th, I think, in the States, November 11th, I think, in Japan. And then there's going to be $699 or $599?
I think it's $100 more.
Okay. So, yeah, so it's $599 then for the 60-gigabyte version.
It's one of those things that I've tried to push out of my head.
Yeah. But when I had first heard about it, I thought it was really going to be just the size of the its capacity, but there's more to it. Is that right, or?
I don't know.
I thought that I had heard somewhere along the lines that there was more to it than just the capacity. And I had speculated at one point in time whether or not you'd be able to expand the system. If let's say you bought the 20.
I think that the higher end model also outputs in 1080p.
Okay.
I don't know if the lower end model, I'm sure that they both do HD resolutions in general.
Okay.
You know, like 720p, but I think that the higher one does 1080p, which is unnecessary for most of the people out there.
Right.
You know, maybe like 1% of the population or less actually has a TV that's can take advantage of the signal that it'll produce.
Right. Well, you know, I was really kind of put off by, I'm really kind of put off by this price point and this double console thing. And I really didn't spend a lot of time looking at some of the games that they're anticipating for the system. So I don't really have much to say on it there. Was there anything that you saw that stood out?
That's just it. Because one of the big things was a Final Fantasy game, and they really weren't saying if it's a remake. You know, I think it's a remake of Final Fantasy. They showed one of the pre-rendered cutscenes from Final Fantasy VII, supposedly in real time on the PlayStation 3, and it looks the same way, which is a way of touting the PlayStation 3's graphical capabilities. I don't care.
Yeah, I had heard that. I heard that they were going to completely rehash Final Fantasy VII because it's probably the most popular of the series for the system, but I haven't really seen anything.
There's legions of people out there who really want it. It just happens to be one of those things that I don't really care about. I don't like walking around the little map and then suddenly I get attacked by monsters that I couldn't see anyway.
You know what? I always liked the Final Fantasy games, but I thought a game that I thought was better than that if they're going to redo a game, I'd rather see would be Chrono Trigger. But I don't know. It's, they're both Sony games. They were both Sony Squaresoft games. So who knows? Maybe. You never know.
Yeah. One of the other things was when PlayStation 3 was first announced, I forget what show it was, about a year and a half ago, I guess, they showed the sequel to Killzone video,
okay,
which is really an amazing video, and I'm going to say it's an amazing CG video because I don't believe it was real time, and if it was somehow in real time, you know, I'm wrong, and so what, but the game itself looks like it could be awesome if it turns out to be anything like the video is. It's just like the amount of action, explosions, smoke, particle effects, the tail in people's faces, even feels like the sound, even though you're only watching it, you know, on the internet as a QuickTime or Windows Media, right, or whatever, it's something to really get excited about. And that's the only thing that I've really seen and said, wow, like if I could play that game, that would be the next generation. That gave me that feeling that like the first time that I saw Mario 64 versus,
right,
Super Mario World on Super Nintendo, it was like, wow, that is a jump. That's what I felt with that video, but I think it's just a video.
Yeah, I don't know. With that being said and with that feeling, do you think that the price on the system is going to hurt it? I think it's going to hurt it, personally.
I think it's going to hurt it as well, but you know what it is? All of the companies now realize, and this goes with a lot of media in general, mm-hmm, that people who create these things realize that we've grown up with it.
Right.
You know, we were, what, you know, 9, 8, 9 when we started.
Right.
And now that we're older, we're in our 20s, we have jobs, we got that income to blow, right, on it, maybe. They can take advantage of that, and they can just dip deeper into our pockets and take that money because we are the people who will buy it.
You know what? I agree with you.
I'm not buying it.
Well,
there's no way. There's no way I'm dropping. There's no way I'm dropping $5. I barely got over buying a 360.
Right.
I barely got through, emotionally, I barely got through buying a 360. There's no way in heck I'm going to drop another $150 for a PlayStation on top of what I paid for the Xbox, another $150.
See, in our age category, I think that feeling is probably, that's probably lower on the scale. I think really where it's going to hurt is mom and dad buying it for their kids for Christmas. I mean, November 17th. Right, which is a week or a week and a half before Black Friday, you know, the biggest Christmas rush of the year, and it's obviously being planned for that huge Christmas push. I don't see mom and dad going out there and spending $600 on little Jimmy to put under the Christmas tree. I don't see it.
Nope.
And I think that's really going to hurt. I think that's really going to hinder and hurt the system, and I wonder how long it'll take before you see some sort of drastic price drop.
Exactly, and that's when you'll see the sales. I think the broad market sales, I think, are going to happen after their first, maybe not even their, because don't forget they don't tend to crash very quickly in price. You know, the first drop is usually 50 to 100. You know, I've seen one system, I can't remember what system it is, but one of those systems that was up in the high brackets came down almost $100 in its first.
A Dreamcast came down
Dreamcast,
pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, you know what? They don't fall too quickly when they're flying off the shelves. The PlayStation 2 still sells really, really well, so you're not going to see a huge price crash,
right,
there. But I think if this is hindered by price, I think the potential for a price crash sooner or more drastically is probably possible.
And that's when I think you'll see the bulk of the sales happen. Because, yeah, I'm not going to... I tell you, just from a personal perspective, and you guys, I think, are covering this topic very well, but I'm talking about just from my personal perspective, is that I can't see dropping $500, mm-hmm, on something because they are trying to have me believe that this will be an essential component for your home entertainment system. It's right. No longer just about being a video game console. Is this the one that plays Blu-ray?
Yes.
Right. Yes. So, you know, this is the one that's going to play the new Blu-ray DVDs. So they're saying that this is more than just a video game console. This is the pitch, is that it's more than just a video game console. This is the hub for your entire entertainment system.
Sony's always kind of conducted business with this supreme arrogance once they actually got that, became the leader in the industry with the PS2, that now they're kind of using the shotgun approach with the PS3, where you saw the original boomerang style controller for the
right.
for the PS3 that they announced, and you know, people said it looked like a double sided dildo. It was really the ugliest right, thing you could ever imagine. It looked uncomfortable. It didn't look like, you know, it added anything new. It brought anything new to the market. And now what's happened is at E3 they said, "Oh, that's right, we scrapped that controller, and the new controller looks like," and then they unveil it, and it looks just like the PS2 controller, which yep. a lot of people were happy about.
Sure.
And then a lot of people said, "Oh, that's no big thing. You know, that's fine, but it's not innovating."
Right.
And then they said, "Oh, but it is, because it has a function that's similar to the Nintendo Wii's function."
Right.
And then you see a guy playing a game like Warhawk, which is like a flight simulator game, more of an action arcade flight game, where you fly a plane / helicopter thing that does a couple little morphs, and you use the controller to, you know, steer left and right, and it looks like the most cumbersome, unintuitive thing you could possibly imagine. It doesn't right. look like the guy can shoot anything in the game. It doesn't look like he's having any fun. The graphics are pretty good. It's mostly an open space, but it brings nothing new to the table, and it's just a me too bit of technology where Sony said, Nintendo's really got something going here, which is exactly what happened with the original DualShock controller.
Right.
You know, Nintendo came out with the Nintendo 64, it had the analog stick on it. They're using it for some novel things like, you know, tiptoeing, walking, and running in Super Mario World. And then Sony was like, "Oh, we can do the same thing. We'll just put two sticks on the controller, and that'll really get them." And as a drawback, they actually had to take out the rumble feature, of the PS3 controller. But nothing new. I wouldn't say it's anything new. It's like PS2 on steroids.
Yeah, it's no like rumble. PS2 and a half. You know what? I think that this system will do a lot better overseas than it will do here too. That's something else I think. I think that probably in Japan it will be huge. I think that Japan embraces that whole center of your entertainment system kind of feeling that Sony is selling. And I think that America says it's a game console and it's secondary or tertiary to the rest of my entertainment system.
My DVD player, my big TV,
your Blu-ray player,
my sound right. system.
Right. I don't think that this country is going to embrace it as the center of their entertainment center like Japan will. I think Japan will definitely take it for what it's worth.
Especially with the DVD wars coming.
Right. Well, yeah, we might as well go right there. You've got high def and Blu-ray, and you know, high definition DVD I think is available through the Xbox, right, to tie it in a little bit.
I think they're making
PS3 is Blu-ray.
They're making a component. Microsoft is developing an HD DVD add-on.
Well, that's what they announced, and they showed at E3 too, is a USB HD DVD drive. However, I don't know what the state of the whole HDMI output and component video output is. I think it does component. I don't think that there's an official HDMI Microsoft cable anyway, which is what people who are going to buy that would want. I don't think that's out yet. It'll probably come out.
It'll probably come out around the same time, right?
Well, one would assume that they're going to make a drive that they're not going to lessen the experience by not going with an HDMI cable.
Dumber things have been done.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, I mean, look, Kevin, you've got probably the single-handed biggest DVD collection of anybody I know.
That's true.
What's your opinion on the HD versus Blu-ray?
From what I'm hearing, both HD and Blu-ray machines both are backwards compatible.
Correct. That is correct.
So for me, as a DVD collector, not going to matter.
Okay.
It's going to be where I want to go in the future. There's also the whole theory of the hybrid discs, which will be a standard format, standard formatting on one side, and either HD or Blu-ray on the other side of the DVD.
And what's the price? What do you think the price point on these types of discs is going to be?
Well, it's not going to be. It's not going to. I would say probably not different than what you're seeing right now. HD DVDs aren't by and large more. They're out now. They're not by and large more expensive. I've seen than regular DVDs. I expect that Blu-ray will not. I mean, if Blu-ray doesn't want to shoot itself in the foot, they're not going to come out of the gate being $10 more than regular DVDs. But here's the point: you have discs now that have widescreen on one side and standard on the other, and I don't see the processing as being any different than that.
Although you tell me as a collector, this is what I've noticed, just kind of from watching from the sidelines and watching DVDs. But has that trend? Have the movie studios gone away from that trend? They do that less and less now. They now force you to buy either one or the other,
yes,
rather than packaging the double sided disc.
You know what it is?
It's for the
I hate to say this. It's for the baby boomer generation who cannot understand. They don't want to see the black bars. I don't want to see the black bars on the top and the bottom of my screen. But when you try to explain to them that you're seeing the whole movie,
was that an impression of my mom?
No. No, it was really closer to your dad.
It was either my mom or my dad when he was saying that.
Wow.
Mr. Nice. Fantastic, I want you to look at my new TV that I have in the den over here. Of course, his dad wouldn't call him Mr. Fantastic, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
The point is that for me as a collector, it's not going to matter because my DVDs, my 2,200 DVDs are going to be able to be played on any one of these systems. And the person who's going to make the most money machine-wise is the person that develops the hybrid machine that's able to play all three formats. And right now, of course, they're saying nobody will make such a machine because the Blu-ray technology will only be allotted to certain consumer electronics companies.
I've heard
although
that.
Those companies, if you add them together, probably make up about 80% of the world's,
Right. Where I stand companies on this right now is, you know, it's interesting to talk about. It's fun to talk about and speculate. It's not going to matter when, you know, in 5 years, one or the other will be dominant. There'll be a smaller presence by whichever one is not on top, and we'll live with it. And you'll continue to buy either Blu-ray or HDVD.
I don't
HD DVD discs.
I think I'm gonna disagree with you, Fantastic, because I've been through this once already, and you're probably too young to remember, and so are you probably. But we went through this with VHS versus Beta, and let me tell you, there was a clear winner, and it was quickly decided within 2 years of Betamax being out. It was dead, you know. And I don't mean dead in this. There are still people who collect Betamax videos. I understand it, but there are still people that do that. And I think this is the same thing. I think this is all going to be about, just like it was then, it's going to be about accessibility. It's going to be about, and I got to give Blu-ray the edge here.
I agree.
Because 80% of the world's electronics companies are going to be producing Blu-ray, which puts HD at an enormous disadvantage. HD was out first. They're out now, you know, and quite frankly, I don't agree with either one of them. I think the picture coming off a standard DVD is excellent.
See, that's well, the
if you get the right, if you get the right, I mean to cut you off, but if you get the right resolution and the TV with a resolution that will match the output of a resolution on an HDMI DVD player. Are you telling me that the picture is going to get... And don't give me this...
I haven't said anything about this yet. I've just been shaking my head and he's speaking in anticipation.
I know, because I know you're gonna make this this argument like we've heard that HD is capable of an almost three-dimensional picture?
Yeah. That's all I have to say about that. No, what I want to say is I think Blu-ray has the edge because I think what people don't fully realize, and I don't think I fully realized it either at first, is that I believe the Blu-ray discs are going to be able to hold more capacity. That's really the That's really where it is. So now instead of having, let's say, a 6-DVD box set of your favorite television show, they're going to be able to cram it onto maybe 2 discs. Instead of Lord of the Rings Extended Edition being on 2 DVDs or you have to flip the DVD, it's going to be on one side. But the Blu-ray discs, with their larger capacity, are going to be able to hold high-definition movies. And they're going to be hold high-definition burns.
Do you know what the difference?
So what do you need HD DVD for then?
Do you know what the difference is? HD DVD, 45 gigabytes. Blu-ray, 200 gigabytes.
But the big question is, it's not even a question, that the minimum requirement is it has to hold an HD DVD movie, which current DVDs don't do right now. So when you hook up that either HDMI or component video, DVD player, progressive scan, whatever it is, even to your 1080p TV, you don't get that HD signal because it's not on the disc. Either way, Blu-ray or HD DVD, you're going to get that HD signal and you'll get a better picture. It's that simple.
I'm telling you, I have an HDMI DVD player. I have a 1080 interlaced available 67-inch DLP screen.
I'm looking at it.
And I'm telling you, I have seen better picture on other TVs than my TV. My TV is superior, really. But there are even more superior. Sure. My mother's LCD TV blows my TV away. It sickens me that she has a better TV than me. It's smaller, mind you, because if they made a 67-inch LCD right now, it probably costs around $12,000. But I suspect the next 5 years, we're probably going to be seeing comparable pricing to DLPs of today, in which case I will switch. Instantly, right. The moment it's affordable, I will switch to LCD like that. What they will have us believe, and what Mr. Fantastic is backing here is the fact that this will bring your picture even one step better by having the HD. Now I watch HD. I have HD cable. I watch HD on my HD TV, and I agree with Mr. Fantastic in the sense that HD programming is wow. I mean, it's beautiful and it's crisp and clear, and that's all well and good. What I'm telling you is that there just doesn't need to be a war, and this is it.
And that, Kevin, is actually where I agree with you. I think it's going to be when the battlefield is bare and the bodies are dead. It doesn't matter which one you back now, right? Because
as long as they play the 2200 that I have now. I don't care. And really, again, the person who's going to make the money is the person who either makes a machine that plays both, or the moment one of them goes away.
I have absolutely no problem keeping a secondary $24 Apex DVD player from Walmart next to my $500 HD DVD player.
Really? So you're going with HD?
What?
Over Blu-ray?
I like the way you read into that.
No, I don't know. I think we probably summed it up pretty well. I think it's probably too early to speculate about anything that we talked about in this segment. The game systems, the new DVD players. I think it's really going to be a matter of when they come out, when we have them in our hands, although HD is out already. I don't personally have one, so I haven't had the opportunity to use it. But when everything is out and we'll be able to actually compare everything together, that's when you'll have a be able to make some sort of better opinion. And I think as of right now, it's really just speculation and opinions.
Right. And we don't want to go too far with those speculations and opinions because we would be bearing false witness against those technologies and those machines and those things that we've talked about in this segment. And we don't want to do that.
No.
I'd like to end the segment with 2 words. Duck hunt.
I don't get it.
I don't care. I like it.
What is Duck Hunt? You mean the Nintendo game, Duck Hunt?
Nintendo Wii will have a Duck Hunt game for it, and it looks fun.
Is it cutesy little cartoony ducks like the last Duck Hunt game?
No, they're absolutely picturesque, real-looking ducks, and when you shoot them, they explode just like real ducks. And you can feed them Alka-Seltzer.
Nice.
It's completely realistic.
I'm really? There?
No, not really.
I'm sold. I want one.
I'm not buying, first of all, Nintendo. Second of all, anything called Wii. And third of all, anything that has Duck Hunt as a game.
Vive la Revolution.
No. And I'm not dropping six bills on a PlayStation either.
Neither am I.
I'll be having that PlayStation in 2009 when that shit's $199.
When the PS4 comes out?
Yeah, exactly.
I just bought a PlayStation 2 again. I mean, I had it at, like, when it came out, and I sold it.
$100, right?
$130. Yeah. I bought God of War. There's a whole bunch of different greatest hit games that you can get for $20. You know, the real nerds out there would be like, oh, you don't buy the Redbox games because then, you know, you're on the bandwagon. But, hey, I do. And I play through the whole things. I played through Jack 3, Jack 2, Jack and Daxter in that order, oddly enough. God of War, Ratchet and Clank, all good stuff, $20.
Yeah.
Sony, I feel like they're cannibalizing their own market by making PlayStation 2 that attractive at such a low price point, and then coming out end of this year, $600, punching me in the face.
You know, has PlayStation said if they're going to completely disband, completely stop making games for the PS2? I haven't read that yet. That'll be interesting.
Well, I know at least God of War 2 is coming out, and I'm sure that there's a whole bunch of different EA games. EA will probably make games for the PlayStation 2 till 2010 or some ridiculous year like that.
I might have missed this, but is it backwards compatible, P3?
Yes.
Yeah.
And is the Wii backwards compatible?
Yes.
To, I guess, GameCube?
To the GameCube.
To the GameCube, but also, like I said, and this is the reason I have that classic controller, it's going to have those old Nintendo games on it. Oh, okay. Entire library of old Nintendo games.
Is the entire library going to be on one disc?
Because it connects to the internet, the interweb.
Oh.
And you can just grab
on. Oh, kind of like the Xbox thing.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet with mine.
The Xbox Live Arcade?
Those are actually some of the best-selling games for Xbox right now. Geometry Wars is the single coolest game that you can play on that. It's an old-school, asteroid-style, like high-energy, you know, fast graphics arcade game, and it's the talk of the town because it's a good game.
You know what I played over the weekend? I wanted to tell you this. I might as well tell you on the show. You know what I played over the weekend? I found an upright, working, perfect condition StarCastle machine. You remember StarCastle?
Not a huge fan.
The vector graphics game?
Yes.
It's awesome. I played it. It was so loud and it was so just like in your face. I miss games like that.
Yeah, I mean those arcade games are still around. Normally when I go to an arcade now, there's an arcade in Port Authority, and when I go there, it's a whole wall of fighting games and a whole wall of gimmick games. Games that have guns, games that have skis,
games that have
a paddle, games that have a treadmill crazy thing. But the fighting games I can get into, it's usually myself and 12 inner city youths. And
youths.
It's fun youths. The arcade is pretty much dead other than that.
Yeah, it is. It's true. But you know what? Where you can go, you got to go down to the boardwalk. You got to go down to Seaside Heights. They have a retro arcade down there that has all those games, all them old games like Tapper and Q-Bert.
You know who's got that too? Disney has that.
Oh, really?
They have that their little virtual reality indoor park now called Disney Quest. And on like the third floor of that building, it's all these old like Tron and like all these old retro games, and
like
they're all free play. Like you could just, you know, because you pay to get into the building, I guess you pay like whatever it is.
I've been looking for 10 years for a cabinet version of Disc of Tron, not the first Tron, second Tron game.
The Tron's upright games, the arcade coin op machines, are probably one of the most routinely reconstructed games.
Oh yeah, I know.
Stand-up machines.
Visually
they have out
impressive
there.
Games, so much so that people like rebuild them all the time.
Right.
You go on eBay, you can see parts for them. They're always available.
A good site for that is build your own arcade controls. I believe it's arcadecontrols.com. Has a whole library. It's a real old school, completely HTML site with little animated GIF icons, and it's pretty ugly. But there's a lot of good links there that, you know, if you are interested in building your own machine, which is another whole topic,
right?
Another show.
Well, let's talk about that topic because I think we're sailing into the second hour, which is
now.
Well, looks like Shocker gets bumped another week.
Yeah, it happens. You know,
that's a very exciting piece, though. I'm looking forward to talking about that next week.
It is, but it has a little bit of longevity, so we can hit it next week.
Episode X.
Nice.
See. See.
Yes. So what do we talk about today? We talked about Bryan Singer not potentially doing Superman 2 and doing doing four. A Logan's Run remake.
Superman 5, 6.
Yeah, whatever. We hit upon
It would be 6.
Yes. It would be 6. We hit upon Halle Berry not wanting to do X-Men necessarily, but interested potentially in Catwoman 2. God only knows why.
I think it was more of a, you know, she would be interested in some sort of role in an X film about the younger mutants where she would be some sort of leader or something.
Yeah, yuck. Is
yet
what I'm saying.
She would do another Catwoman film because that character needs to be, can be explored more.
No, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
She'd be explored as roadkill. Dead Catwoman.
What the hell was that sound?
It's a hairball. Fantastic as a hairball. Nice. Then we quickly hit upon a Warcraft movie coming out and the pitfalls that it can fall into if it's not handled properly.
Warcrap.
Yeah, exactly. With the CGI and the budget of the film. And we also hit upon the wonderfulness of Sideshow and the premium format. Luke and Vader. Luke and Vader. Ew. Luke and Yoda.
Stop.
No. Oh, no, you got to keep going from that.
Luke and Yoda on Dagobah and how Kevin wants to destroy the figure.
Darth Vader from New Jersey.
I did not say I want to destroy the figure. What I said was, I think that it's time for them to start taking some more action-oriented poses with the premium formats. That's all. Maybe something to think about. That's all.
No
They're
more
great. They're
no
still
more
great.
Ken doll style.
Not Ken doll style. It's like, okay, we've. It's time. It's just time.
Right. And then Kevin brought us back into some of the feedback that we've been getting on the show about some of the things that we criticize on the show. He criticizes on the show.
There was criticism of our criticism. And what I say is, you know, it's my opinion. You don't have to agree with it. And if you think that I'm not well informed about a topic that I'm talking about, fine. Say that you think that. And am I going to now go in and look into Dan Buckley, the publisher of Marvel Comics, and find out if he is Dr. Claw? You bet I'm going to do that. You bet I'm going to find out who Falcon's boss is, and I'm going to find out why that guy is making these or those guys are making these decisions. You betcha.
Aren't you going to say fuck you? That's like the whole point of the piece.
No.
Say it.
No.
Say it. Bitch.
I thought you were going to say it.
No.
I wanted him
to
say it.
Not going to say it.
We'll just clip it from earlier and put it in.
The closest we got was fine.
Fine.
Pussy.
No, I'm not a pussy at all. I am taking the high road. That's all.
And after Kevin's little rants there, we moved right into
E3. I don't like it. Kevin's little rants. I was answering the constituents to whom we represent.
It was your little rants in our little podcast, as Fantastic pointed out last week.
Yeah, our little podcast.
Let's just move into.
So, Kev, does your little segment, does your segment there have a name? Is it like Big Kev's Big
Random
Bitch Fest?
No. I'm cutting all this out.
It's
so
called Critical.
Say what you want.
It's called Critical Toys.
Fuck you.
Look at that. You turn it on. I'm cutting this out.
Critical Toys. Big Kev's CriticalToys.com.
Plugor. We moved right into, after that, E3, some of the feelings that we had about the 360, the Wii, and the PS3. Price points, innovation, games that are coming out, how we really feel about each individual unit and where they're going to do well and not do well.
And we expanded on that conversation by getting into the the opening salvo of the DVD wars. Will it be HD DVD or will it be Blu-ray DVD? My opinion is, as long as they play my 2200, I don't care who wins.
Right. I agree with you. Although if I had to make a guess right now, I think that Blu-ray is probably going to weather the storm a little bit better.
80% of companies will be making Blu-ray. I think that says it all right there. It brings us back to VHS versus Betamax. I think we're going to see it all over again with this format.
And I think that probably clears us up for this episode. So next week, you could definitely look forward to. Now, of course, I'm it means it's going to get bumped again, but you can definitely look forward to the Shocker piece, the Shocker press release.
On episode X.
And on that note, we cue the music.